From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour as we move on through this very hot summer. Or maybe it's just summer, and it's redundant to say hot summer. It's always hot here in the summer. Julie Sly, the editor of the Catholic Herald magazine, joins us again. And Julie joins us, as all our guests are, remotely, by phone. We didn't used to call it when we were talking on the phone remotely. We just said she's on the phone. So she's on the phone. Good day, Julie.
I'm not sure what remote means anymore.
Well, Julie has an office.
I'm virtual.
Yeah, Julie has an office about 10 feet across the hallway from our radio studio here. And
I'm always remote.
But you're always remote. Keep that door shut. You have a better view than I do. You have a window.
Oh, well, we like to keep you humble.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not hard.
No, yeah, it's. I don't have any trouble being humble, I'll tell you.
No.
Yeah, so.
How are you doing with all your family at home?
We have, we're sheltering in place with four teenagers. We're waiting for the Congressional Medal of Honor to be bestowed
right.
upon our family.
Yeah.
They're not only, you know, they're close together. They're 18, 17, 16, and 15. So, you know, they're just one after another stair steps. And I've been very pleased with how valuable the family time has become, you know, eating dinner together literally every night, you know, and having great long discussions about our faith, about world affairs, about upcoming election, about what we can do, what they can do in their own ways to make this a better world. It's been fairly darn productive, and
of course you have outdoor, you can go for walks. And
we can go for a walk. You know, we're in a small town, in a town that you know, we've been fairly lucky in terms of following the rules and keeping the virus at bay for the most part. Not always, but for the most part, and we're very, you know, you go a mile in any direction and you're going to be in the wide open spaces, all farmland and everything else. And I can't think of a better place to be than walking through a cornfield or an orchard, an almond
sure.
orchard or something like that. And we're surrounded with that. So
you're a lot less people now, actually, the college students not there.
Yeah. And that's my town, which is Davis. I think that's the big question. I mean, they have 38,000 students who have all been missing in action since March.
Oh, is that how many? I wasn't quite sure.
Yeah,
I knew it was more than 30,000, but I wasn't quite
it's a
sure.
Big, big number. And some of the international students have still been in town. And no student had to leave town, but virtually all of them did. They did have to leave the dorms, but the dorms don't handle 38,000 students. Most of them only live in the dorms for a year or two, and then they get an apartment or something. Some of them commute locally. But the big question is what happens when and if 38,000 students come back? Because that's that with current trends, that's been the age group where the transmission has really soared. It seems like people in the elderly population got the message loud and clear very early and have done a very good job of sheltering in place and staying out of crowded areas and wearing face masks and avoiding all these possible areas of transmission. And
right.
But the younger crowd, that message in many cases has not gotten through. And fortunately for them, most of them don't get very sick, and many of them are asymptomatic. but they can spread it to other people, and that's right. You know, and so we may be in a lull in my town because I think most college towns are probably seeing very low rates of transmission, and you don't have any students there. But I also trust the people at the university are they're preparing in a very serious way that you know, we're going to make sure this is a safe environment.
Oh, sure.
Just as, you know, we talked yesterday with Lincoln Snyder, the director of our Catholic schools here in the Diocese of Sacramento, and they are going back to in-person instruction within the next 3 or 4 weeks, and they have just spent the last 3 or 4 months, ever since March, planning for this and meeting with county health directors and state health directors and paying attention to what other places have done and what their experience has been, et cetera. And I'm very confident that they have put together what will be the safest possible environment. And I think we all agree that the kids need to be in school, and there is disagreement whether, you know, certain districts are going to be able to do it safely. But I'm very confident our Catholic schools are going to do it safely. And frequently in the public arena, there are different issues at play as well. There are political issues at play. There are union issues at play. There are a lot of different issues that our Catholic schools don't face. So I'm very confident in that. But and I think everybody in education, whether it's public or private, university level or kindergarten, everybody is thinking about this 24 hours a day and thinking about what's the best plan. I have very great confidence. People are going to make mistakes, but I have very great confidence that they really, their hearts and their minds are in the right place. They're all working toward the same goal, which is the health and safety of our kids, our students, and our population as a whole.
So I think we were going to continue with just talking about a few more stories.
Yes.
From our July August issue.
It's a great issue.
Yes. Well, I'm happy we were able to do a lot of the stories that we did. The topic was youth and racism.
Yes.
At the time that Bishop Soto chose it last fall, I'm not sure that we knew exactly how timely it would be. It ended up being very timely.
Absolutely. I thought it was, when I first saw it, I thought that must be a special edition that you came out with in response to current events, when in fact this was something that had been planned for some time.
Right. We usually do choose the themes for the following year. Like, if, you know, so this fall we would choose the themes for 2021. Although there have been times where something is more pressing, then certainly we would change the theme. But One of the features that we didn't cover, we had talked about the cover story and some of the other parts of the cover story, but we do have a feature on young adults who have been served as missionaries already in the U.S. and abroad. And so we talked with 4 young adults. One is Louisa Quiros she's a recent graduate of UC Davis. In March, in clinical nutrition. Actually, she also had a minor in Spanish. She's very involved in the Newman Center at Davis. And she grew up in Calexico, California, right on the border.
Mm-hmm.
She's born in Mexico. And she describes her time at the Newman Center as a rock in my journey of faith and my journey as a college student. I needed a community of people my age who are striving for the same things I am. I wanted friendships rooted in Christ. So she's already done, I believe, 6 mission experiences in the past 5 years.
Wow.
So she's really had a lot of experience now. But her first 3 were only 40 minutes from her home in Calexico. They were called Mega Mission, mm-hmm. and they were sponsored by the secular group of the Legionaries of Christ. They were held during Holy Week. Her first time that she did it, she was 18, a senior in high school, and they helped in very low-income communities with few resources. She says they gave talks, prayed, offered Eucharistic adoration stations at the cross, and daily mass. She said there was nothing else we were supposed to be doing during Holy Week but walking with our Lord and Mary.
Wow.
Her fourth mission trip was in Cancun, Mexico. Mm-hmm. She assisted at a home for the elderly and another home for the terminally ill and also another safe house for women who were victims of domestic violence, as well as a school for teens who had dropped out of regular school. She says helping the elderly and the terminally ill was a great reminder of the dignity of the human person. During that mission, she also visited a nearby prison to share the gospel with prisoners and speak about forgiveness and bring hygiene items and snacks. She says that part of the mission was humbling, as we are all sinners and we are not better than those in prison. So then another experience she had was on a winter break from college. She, in December 2018, she participated in a week-long mission with the Fellowship of Catholic University Students, FOCUS, in the Dominican Republic. She volunteered in a camp where evangelization, prayer, and daily mass were combined with sports for 30 to 50 young people.
Yeah, Focus has a very good reputation.
Yes, I believe actually she did another trip with Focus for 2 weeks in Argentina in July 2019. Working with priests and seminarians of the Servants of the Lord, assisting people with physical and mental disabilities with their both most basic needs. I believe actually she was also, as I was the one who spoke with her, I believe also she was doing some sort of mission for the next year with Focus, but I'm not sure. At the time I talked with her, everything was a little bit up in the air because of the pandemic. So she didn't know what her assignment or volunteer assignment would be.
Boy, she is a person to keep your eye on. She is going to go places.
Well, she certainly, and I, she's only 23 and had all those experiences. So
That's remarkable. And, of course, Calexico, Mexicali, the twin cities, if you will, the two together are huge. I believe Mexicali is quite a bit bigger than Calexico, but my goodness, to come! I wonder how she picked Davis. That's a long ways from home.
I can't remember. I didn't speak with her. I can't remember. Maybe it was the particular area of study she wanted to do. She didn't say that she wanted to possibly go on in the future for a master's in public health, mm-hmm. or also to specialize being a dietitian, because she did, I don't think I included, I think I had to cut this part out of the story, which sometimes that happens when you get in layout, but I believe she said that she really felt her education in clinical nutrition brought her a perspective of helping the whole person. So mm-hmm. if someone's not able to access healthy food and nutritious food, that's only going to put them further behind in their development.
It's well established, isn't it? Yeah.
So I think that was something, certainly she's combining her experiences of helping people who were a lot of times in impoverished areas, and That doesn't necessarily mean you can't eat healthy. You just have to bring the message of, actually, in those cases, a lot of times people are growing their own vegetables and fruit and that, which is a lot healthier than even having access to stores and that if you grow. And that's kind of been a phenomenon of the pandemic, actually.
Right. Yeah, it is. Absolutely. Yeah.
A lot of people have started gardening again and focusing on raising on their own fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, I liked what she said about Newman Center at UC Davis, and of course we have Newman Centers at Sacramento State and at Chico State here in the Diocese of Sacramento. She says, being involved at the Newman Center was a rock in my journey of faith and my journey as a college student. I needed a community of people my age who are striving for the same things I am. I wanted friendships rooted in Christ. Everyone was so welcoming, regardless of who you are, what you've done, and what you're studying. You know, when my oldest daughter, when I took her off to the University of Arizona a number of years ago, we were on campus on the first day, getting her stuff into her dorm room, on, and we took a break, and we went outside in the heat of Tucson in August, and we saw a whole group of people walking across the quad, all headed somewhere, and we thought, well, it must be some kind of a freshman orientation thing we didn't know about. And so we hurried over and joined the crowd and kept walking with them, and they were all headed to the Newman Center for Mass.
Oh, wow.
And it was just, it was so encouraging to me, and as a dad dropping off my daughter, to know that that community was there, you know, and to hear this young woman at Davis say the same thing about her Newman Center is, and I would, you know, this is the time of year where people are taking their former high school seniors off to college, at least to those colleges that are going to have in-person classes, and it's one thing that you should look for right away. Where's the Newman Center? Virtually every college in America has a Newman Center. And I don't know the exact data, but there are a lot of Newman Centers around there. And
oh, definitely. And I can't imagine someone, well, this happens all the time. I'm certainly, this fall is going to be much, much different, because some is still going to be online and some will be in person. And even the in-person, you won't be sitting right next to someone in a classroom. But just coming from a different place and going to a campus of 35 or 38,000 students, I don't, you know, it's not that easy to meet people or to find people that have your same values or same vision of life.
A place where you feel like you belong, you know. And, I would strongly encourage parents to you know, find the Newman Center before you pack up for wherever it is you're going, and maybe I'll go to Mass there. I remember many times being at the Newman Center in Davis, both as a student and then later in life, and seeing on certain weekends when the students would bring their parents to Mass. The parents were visiting for one thing or the other, you know, and introduce them to the congregation, and it was a very very family feel in that congregation.
Well, we're lucky we have three
very
dynamic Newman Centers for each of our college campuses.
Yeah,
let me move on to our second person, an adult, Andrew Wood, who's originally from St. Joseph Parish in Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
He's 23 also. He's a senior at Sac State.
Mm-hmm.
And he spent a year with the Salesian Lay Missionary Program.
So is this a year he took off from college?
Like, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. He was 2 years into college studying to be a teacher,
mm-hmm.
and then he felt called to this missionary experience. And I believe he checked into different opportunities and was very attracted to the Salesian program. Was founded 70 years ago as an arm of the Salesians of Don Bosco, and the lay missionaries served marginalized communities in 130 countries around the world.
Wow.
So he was looking for options that would allow him to work with children. After a weekend in New York, he learned what his mission might look like. He returned home, thought about it some more. So they identified three possible locations where he could serve, and he, I guess the director he was working with promoted the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the largest country in sub-Saharan Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And Andrew says it was a perfect fit for him. So he went there from October 2017 to December 2018. It took him 2 days of flights and connections to get there, where he met his Salesian community, which operates a boys' school. He taught English in the French-speaking country, himself learning French for the first time. Wow. He says, I'm relatively fluent now. I also learned a little bit of Swahili and other random words from other African languages. More than 400 languages are spoken in the Congo. Wow. Can't imagine that. So he lived and worked among the poor in the southern part of the DRC neighboring Zambia. He taught in the school, also worked at centers for youth, connecting with street kids, leading the rosary and prayers. Overall, he says, you can see there was a strong faith in people. I miss the masses filled with singing and dancing and harmonies. He said feast days are particularly beautiful as congregants process and bring gifts. But it's like walking up the aisle or carrying a giant sack of flour. So he says, I know that where I was and who I was with changed me forever. I received more than I could ever have given. He describes the fearlessness that you have to have when you embark on a missionary experience. I try to carry that perspective with me that I had when I was there. Referring to his awareness of Jesus and how the same Jesus who brought him so many beautiful experiences in Africa continues to walk with him today.
Wow. And there's just such a great picture of him with six of the kids that he was working with. How you could, you could just tell. I mean, he was charmed by them.
Cool. Yeah. Then we have Lizzie Fahey, who's 27, and she is on the campus ministry staff at St. Francis High School.
Mm-hmm.
And she talked about her her mission experience was actually from August 2014 to August 2015, after she graduated from Spring Hill College in Mobile, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And she spent a year with the Jesuit Volunteer Corps in Boston. She said, I wasn't learning a totally new culture, and I wasn't dealing with the language barrier, but I was seeing life in a completely different way. She is, I believe, a graduate of St. Francis also, yes. And she is working on her Master of Divinity degree from the Jesuit School of Theology in Berkeley.
Oh, wow.
And I believe she volunteered at Camp Pendola also. I can't remember if this is in here, but I think she did volunteer for some years at Camp Pendola or worked as a counselor there. So her she worked in the Jamaica Plain area of Boston, and there, the JVCs, as some people know, are in many different countries and in the U.S., and they're very focused on social justice issues in their mission work. She worked at the Woman's Lunch Place located in Bat Bay, which she calls a fancy part of Boston. It is a fancy part of Boston. She describes the church basement setting as a secular day shelter for women experiencing homelessness. They serve women ages 14 and older. She says some were unemployed and living out of their cars or living in shelters and needing some place to get their mail or take a shower. Others were dealing with mental illness. She said the racial demographics of Yes mirrored those of Boston, with Asian, white, Latino, and black seeking a daily range of services beyond the daily meal service, such as haircuts, bus passes, creative outlets, and even yoga. She said the organization's motto was dignity is everything, which fit very well with Catholic social teaching and the dignity of the human person. It wasn't a difficult place for me to translate my faith into a lived reality, even if it wasn't explicitly a Christian organization. She says running the kitchen turned out to be the most spiritual for her. She loved working with the volunteer groups that would come to greet guests, serve meals, or help clean.
Wow. I like, she says about her experience, I think I hit the jackpot. I loved my organization. I loved my coworkers. I loved the work I got to do every day, and I absolutely loved the whole community. Boy, as a parent, isn't that what you'd want to hear from one of your kids going off on a sort of an unknown situation to come back and say, I think I hit the jackpot?
Well, and I think, too, with the JVCs, they always live in some sort of community house. I mean, we have JVC volunteers here in Sacramento doing different things. So part of their experience is a year of living with other young adults who usually come from all different places, so they don't know each other ahead of time. And they have to do community meals, and they're sharing at night what they're experiences are and living in community, so that's a whole other aspect of it.
And you know, so when we were talking about Andrew Wood, there was one point I wanted to make that he said, giving at least a year of your life to God is a way to discover how you will give the rest of your life to Him. What a profound discovery.
He's also the brother of one of our newly ordained priests, or ordained in 2019,
wow.
Father Stephen Wood,
mm-hmm.
who is serving at St. Mary Parish in Vacaville. And
wow.
Our final person in this story, young adult, is Alex Lupercio.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been spending the year with the missionary group called Spiritus, which is based in Menasha, Wisconsin, so the northern part, Diocese of Green Bay. He grew up in St. John the Baptist Parish in Chico.
Mm-hmm.
He's 23.
Everybody's 23. What's the deal?
Well, except for Lizzie. She's 27.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
The others all happen to be 23. Don't ask me why. And he was living... their goal is they live at Mount... They were living in a parish rectory. He was living with other male volunteers, and they also work out of what's called the Mount Tabor Center near Appleton, Wisconsin. And the founders of Spiritus are Eden and Catherine Fjord. They have welcomed a new team of missionaries each year for the past 11 years. They feel very strongly that young missionaries are critical to inspiring youth to follow Jesus and encounter God's love. So they were going around the state giving more than 150 retreats for more than 5,000 Catholic youth each year.
Impressive.
So he had been there since last August. Unfortunately, with the pandemic, I believe their last month or two got a little bit cut off because they weren't able to give in person retreats. And they also formed themselves during that time, the volunteers as the missionary disciples. They have the routine of daily mass, prayer, spiritual direction service, ministry training, and weekly formation courses throughout the year. So
talk to these Fjord people.
Yeah, that might be interesting.
Yeah,
you can talk to them, I'm sure. They're based out of the Mount Tabor Center. I looked it up, seemed to be kind of a youth retreat center in the Diocese of Green Bay.
Wow.
And they have both male and female young adult volunteers do these retreats. So Alex is also a graduate of Notre Dame School in Chico High School. actually, after he attended college for a point, he became a professional soccer referee.
Oh, wow.
And he also was a volunteer in the youth ministry and life team program at St. John the Baptist Parish, also volunteered at the Newman Catholic Center in Cheatville.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I talked to him, they had done 9 months of retreats, but they were cut short in mid-March because of the pandemic and not being able to gather. So 9 of the 15 missionaries were sent home at that point, just their year got a little shortened. But he was decided to stay on for another year. So he's going to be what's called a servant leader in the men's community of the new group of volunteers that will be arriving this August, September. He says, I definitely recommend this to other young adults. What I would advise is to surrender to God and Jesus and grow in your faith. I'm thinking about working for the church in the future, perhaps in youth ministry or college ministry. So this is giving me tremendous experience.
Wow.
And I think there's studies, actually, that have shown, I'm sure maybe Deacon Kevin Stasdow, our head of our Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministry, has, I'm sure, brought this up with you before, but there are definitely nationwide studies that have shown young adults who have some sort of mission experience are more likely to either volunteer in their parish or stay connected to the church in a lifelong way, or to think about going on to pursue some church ministry.
Boy, what a remarkable bunch of young adults you just interviewed.
Yes, they're all really enthusiastic about life. That comes across very much. And all very different experiences also.
Yeah. Well, Julie, I'm glad we were able to reconnect and finish up on this wonderful Catholic Herald. What are you working on for the next?
The next issue is our September-October, which is going to have some articles related to respect life issues.
Mm-hmm.
And actually will be our 10th anniversary of publication.
Oh, very good. Well,
yeah.
we'll look forward to it.
So that it's a challenge for Gabe. He can find some 10th anniversary music for us.
Yes, yeah. We'll have to come up with it.
Or what's my 10th, you're married, what's my 10th anniversary gift?
I don't
paper
know.
Paper or something? No, you're
I'm,
what
I'm,
is
paper? I'm trying to think what, I don't know those
diamonds,
very good.
Bob.
What's it's 25
diamonds.
Is silver
diamonds
and 50 is gold.
You, diamonds from you and Gabe for the 10th anniversary. Or maybe that's the 50th.
I think the 10th is balsa wood. So you get one of those little paper airplanes.
Oh, not even a rosary made out of balsa wood?
Oh, that's an idea. That's an idea.
Okay. You don't have to make any commitments.
Okay. Well, we'll get you. The pressure is now on.
The pressure's on you guys now.
Very good. Thank you, Julie.
Okay. Take care.
Yeah, God bless. That's
okay.
Julie
Bye.
Sly, the editor of the... Gabe says, aluminum is the 10th year presents.
So we will be buying Julie a soda.
A soda?
There you go.
Or some Reynolds wrap?
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Okay. All right. Yeah, indeed. Well, that's wonderful. Wonderful. 10 years of the Catholic Herald magazine. I remember the first one, and it was a big decision to go from the print, from the, you know, newspaper type format to go to the magazine format, but it has been wildly successful. We'll take a quick break, back with more on a Bishop's Hour right after this. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town, and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento, who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hey, this is Chris Owens. I'm the Director of the Office of Family and Faith Formation for the Diocese of Sacramento, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Chris, and thanks for all you've done. And as Chris goes off to work on in Berkeley, and we wish him well, and prayers for him and his family as he leaves us here at the Diocese of Sacramento after doing such such great work here. Well, we're pleased to welcome in Andy Reeves, the Executive Director of the California Catholic Conference, which represents all the bishops of the state of California in dealings with the California legislature and state government primarily. Andy, good day to you.
Good morning. How are you, Bob?
Very good. Very good, I guess. yeah. Good and getting better. That's what I tell the kids every day.
Excellent.
Yeah. So sometimes I have to lie, but, you know, that's why we have confession.
Well, my kids don't even ask. They just assume things are going badly. So.
Yeah, well. Yeah, there's so much. I know the last time we talked, you were talking about, I believe, your son and maybe going to UCLA.
Oh, wouldn't that be a blessing? And he would really like that. But this week, we were more concerned with paddleboarding and getting out and not playing video games. So
you actually got out?
We tried, yes. We went last night to a lake nearby, the Aquatic Center up in, I believe, what is it, Folsom?
Uh-huh.
And it was nice. The weather was nice. The breeze was excellent. There weren't that many people out there, so it was just a nice evening. And he did not have his phone in front of him playing games.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a blessing.
You know, it's just I think every parent is facing that same thing, more so that now than ever before. They want to be on their devices, and they're just like, well, we're locked up. What can we do? And we do what you're doing, Andy. We try to get out as much as we can, as safely as we can. You know, carefully pick the activities we're going to participate in, and then go do them and trust the Lord. You know, but do the, you know, we're big supporters of doing it the right way, and, you know, wear your mask in public and keep your social distancing and be very respectful of other people and their needs. And But there are a lot of ways to get out, and we're very fortunate here in Northern California to have so much wide open space.
Exactly. And that's what we're trying to take advantage of, being out and just doing something. Because, you know, he studies his Chinese.
Yes.
And then he goes onto his phone, and whatever game he's on, he's very good at. But I hear the stories that people actually get paid for playing games, and you can get scholarships for playing games, but I just don't get it.
Last summer we had a international student from China.
Uh-huh.
Stayed with us for a couple of weeks during the summer, and he's actually going to school at Santa Monica Community College and hopes to transfer to a UC or a state university. But a delightful young man, and it speaks perfect English, not from living here, just from he learned it in China. But, you know, sometimes you'd hear him get on the phone with his mom, or he'd be teaching our kids some Chinese. And it's just fascinating to we went to help him get a phone or something, and somebody at the phone store spoke his language, and to see how different it was, how differently animated they were speaking their native language was fascinating, you know. But Chinese was I think our kids picked up maybe three words during the summer. But it's such, you know, I mean, so many of us grew up, I grew up certainly in growing up in the Valley, being as an English speaker, being exposed to Spanish, taking Spanish in high school. Was very, very common, you know, but that language has so many similarities to English, whereas Chinese, man, it was just completely different from English. I admire your son for tackling a language like that. That's not that it's any more a difficult language, but it's certainly, I would think, for an English speaker, a more difficult language than what do they call them, the Romance languages or whatever.
So we'll see, but he's very dedicated to it.
That's great.
This week was also got started on a really crazy note. As you may have heard, the governor issued a shutdown order of church services, as well as some businesses, any indoor activities in 30 counties here in the state of California. 30 counties consisting of approximately 80% of the California population.
Right.
So it has hit us pretty hard in terms of our parishes across the state, and the bishops are trying to get their policies around that and their minds around that. They've had to stop thinking of coming out of the virus pandemic in a linear way, that it's not going to be linear. It's going to be stops and starts and maybe some sideways. But it's my understanding now that I guess all the bishops are going to comply with the orders and are actively talking with county public health officials to discuss, you know, moving forward and how to keep people safe. So I suspect that we're going to see a lot of masses moving outdoors,
mm-hmm.
And other services as well. So I know that there's discussions around how funerals will be handled outdoors, and possibly even weddings and confirmations, things like that.
Yeah, you know, and for our listeners here in the Diocese of Sacramento, which has 20 of the 58 counties in California, the orders specifically affected 8 counties, primarily in the Sacramento area, and exempted 12 other counties, almost all of them in the North State, a couple Amador and El Dorado, Amador being one of them, hills, and Sierra as well, and El Dorado, Sierra, Nevada, El Dorado, and Amador, more toward the Sierra, and then, of course, Siskiyou, Modoc, Trinity, Shasta, Lassen, Tehama, Plumas, up in the North State, They're exempted, but the ones that are hit here in the diocese are Colusa, Glen, Placer, Sacramento, Solano, Sutter, Yolo, and Yuba. But you're dealing with the whole state, obviously, at the California Catholic
right.
Conference. How does, my goodness, the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, which is Los Angeles County and Ventura and Santa Barbara counties.
Santa Barbara, yeah.
My goodness, how does an order like that affect them?
In a massive way.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about arguably the largest surging population right now in the United States is mm-hmm. L.A. County. And there is a desire to keep people safe and to handle it in a way that allows people to continue going to some sort of service or having a relationship with God and their community. So it's very difficult, and they are talking to LA County officials to try and work that out and see what they can do. But it is difficult, and that is still being ironed out. From what I'm hearing, the Archbishop has sent a letter to his priest advising that this is important that we follow and to talk to them about how they can come up with plans at their parish level to deal with things. Because some parishes will be able to move services outdoors, but others won't. And that's going to be challenging for a lot of people who are just starting to get back going to Mass. And my heart goes out to a lot of folks because I really was getting to enjoy going back to Mass. Mm-hmm. It was just a few people that were there at St. Elizabeth's where I was going, but I didn't realize I was going to miss Mass so much, and I know other people are feeling the same way as well. So this is going to be very difficult, I think, over the next few weeks.
Andy, prior to this order, with the limited going back, the maximum of 100 or 25%, whichever is fewer. Encouraging people to go to daily Mass. What reports were you getting from around the state as, number one, as in terms of compliance, and also any of the difficulties or joys of this?
I hadn't heard of any place that was not complying.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't either.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did hear from the bishops that they had a handful of priests who were grumbling, but nothing in terms of non-compliance.
Mm-hmm.
And things were starting to, people were starting to get very comfortable with the idea of wearing masks and being
right.
socially distanced during the services. So it seemed to be going very well. I did have a conversation after the governor's announcement with his staff, and I specifically asked, with all of the contact tracing that counties and state officials are conducting, was there any evidence of infections being traced back to any of our parishes? And they said no.
Wow. Very good question and great answer.
Yeah, and so I said, well, it feels like we're being punished when we don't need to be. And it was a very difficult conversation because their response was, from our understanding, the overwhelming majority of the infections are coming from family gatherings and local neighborhood gatherings. And our fear is that because it's spiking so aggressively right now, that it will affect gatherings of churches and in businesses and restaurants and that kind of thing. So, we're going to avoid that.
It's
wasn't very satisfying, but
it's interesting because there are these assumptions, and I remember in my county, Yolo County, a few weeks ago, as cases were starting to spike, there was this discussion at the county level. Well, let's just an automatic, almost a reflex, right? Let's close all the bars. You know, that we just like, let's close the bars. And one of the supervisors said, you know, okay, let's stop scapegoating and make sure that they're the cause of this. And maybe they well are. And it seems logical. You know, that's where a lot of people gather, and people in groups that maybe don't, they think they're a little more bulletproof than the rest of us, and, you know, that kind of thing. But to just automatically say, we're going to presume that this is where the problem is, and we're going to, you know, is not fair. And I hear exactly what you're saying. Like, well, were there any cases of... Because it's pretty easy to contact trace when you're only dealing with 100 people at mass, and maybe one person has it, and you're saying, no, there weren't. And I think what happens is they keep coming back to that one choir in Mount Vernon, Washington, that at a practice, so many of them got sick, you know, and they get that in their head that it's church that caused that, when in fact it was just a choir practice. There were choirs, there are singing groups, there are all kinds of, you know, it's easy to pin that on the church. And yet, in Georgia, I remember a lot of the early outbreaks were at funerals, you know. And I saw the other day in Montana, which had been very, very, very low, they suddenly had an outbreak, and they blamed it on 3 different weddings. You know, so you just don't know what it is. But I know the church has been so diligent about the Catholic Church, especially. I mean, we've seen some of the other churches, you know, react really strongly against it, go to court, especially the last edict about no singing. The Catholic Church has been, we've really followed the rules.
Yeah, we have, and we like to think that we came up with the rules.
Yeah,
So, we take a lot of great responsibility, and we take this seriously, because we want to be able to come together as a community still to worship. And to have all of this happen the way it has been, you know, I couldn't help but share with the governor's staff that maybe one of the reasons that so many people are just obeying the executive order about social distancing is because they don't feel like they have a say in what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And for the governor to make these new orders without consulting us, it was really a very difficult thing to deal with.
Yeah.
And I've gently suggested to them that maybe they should be consulting with us a little bit more actively. So that, you know, people feel like they have some sort of buy-in, and maybe that'll encourage people to take all of this seriously. We do, and, you know, we're getting the word that, like, I was told that there's a convent in Orange where 30 cases of people who are positive. So,
Wow. Yeah,
I mean, we know this is serious. And we want to be able to protect our folks, not just people
right.
in the pews, but our priests
right.
as well, and those who work for the church. So we're dedicated to doing it the right way. We do feel like we need to be consulted so it can be done the right way. This blanket, just shut down everything again, is really disheartening. And I imagine a lot of folks are going to feel very disheartened by all this and act accordingly.
So with outdoor, are there other restrictions? Are we still talking about the 100 limit or the 25% of normal capacity of the building? Or you look at St. Clair and Roseville, they've got a parking lot that goes all the way to Tahoe. They've got a huge parking lot. I can imagine. I think of other parishes where I'm thinking of a few in small towns that I know where they're in a very urban setting, or some here in Sacramento. It's a very urban setting, and the church takes up the corner of the block, and that's it. They don't have a huge outdoor space where they can, unless they just went someplace else. I mean, away from the facility, and I don't even know if that would be allowed. That will vary a lot, and I presume at that point you're talking about 6 feet and mask, but obviously 6 feet or more and masks and outdoors, there's a lot more safety there than indoors.
Right, and the answer, the short answer to your question is it depends on the county.
Mm-hmm.
It varies greatly across the state. There are several counties where the restriction is simply social distancing must be adhered to, but the numbers are not limited.
Right.
So they can have large gatherings. Others do have limits of 100 max, 25% of the building capacity. So they translate that out to outdoors as well. And then I know of at least San Francisco that is totally banning outdoor services still.
Mm-hmm.
So it varies from county to county.
Yeah, and it's interesting because many states have no gatherings of 50 or more people kind of regulations, and they don't specify. Well, we don't care if it's indoors or outdoors, no
right.
more than 50, you know, and we're seeing that with, you know, football and baseball and everything else. Can they have fans in the stands? And generally so far, even though it's outdoors in most cases, the most of the word has come back no.
Yeah.
So it varies so much from county to county.
The thing that just drives me crazy though is you look at San Francisco, and the one city that is probably the best place to have an outdoor service is the one where it's shut down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know, we can all move to MoDoc County.
Or I think El Dorado County is doing very well.
El Dorado County has not had a single death.
None. Yeah, not one.
Not a single one. MoDoc County has not had a single case.
Yep.
The only one in California that has had no cases, and only one of five in the West, the seven Western states that has had none. And now they only have 9,000 people. I think I read that they have five times as many cows as they have people. But anybody's been to MoDoc County, been to Alturas, been to our parish there, knows it's a wonderful place. I don't know, the winters get pretty severe, but it is a wonderful small community, and I know a very faithful group. I'm trying to figure, what was it? Is it Sacred Heart up there? I'm trying to remember the name of the parish, but they've had such great people up there. And you go, MoDoc County. Well, maybe we'll just. I'm sure right now they don't want us all to move up there. Yeah, Sacred Heart in I just found it here in my book. Sacred Heart in Alturas, great parish. Andy, we've run flat out of time. We need more time with you.
So I'd love that.
We'll look forward to having you on again soon. Stay safe. Keep the faith. We appreciate all you do, and I'm so glad you're the one keeping an eye on everything for us.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Andy.
All right, bye-bye.
Yeah, that's Andy Rivas, the executive director of the California Catholic Conference. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. Of its suffering I do drink, of its work I do sing. On it, my Savior, both bruised and crushed, showed that God is love and God is just.